May 1st, which is coming up next week in case you've lost track, is a huge day for many high school seniors around the country. It's the deadline for them to decide which college they plan to attend. And if the current trend continues, a growing number of them will choose not to major in the humanities. Instead of studying literature, philosophy, history, or the arts, a significant percentage will opt to major in fields that give them more marketable job skills. Think computer science, information technology, engineering. Our next guest has written a new book in which he argues that this decline in humanities education is cheating today's students of a rich college experience and education. That's not a new argument, of course, but Andrew Del Banco, an American Studies professor at Columbia University, goes further. In college, what it was, is, and should be, he writes that yes, schools do need to train tomorrow's workers, but he says they should also provide what he calls a rehearsal space for democracy. I asked him to begin with the title of his book and explain what he thought college should be.
Well, my book is an effort to try to distill what I take to be the basic idea of the American college. Now, we should keep in mind we've got about 4,000 institutions in this country that call themselves colleges. So there's a great array, and that's one of the great strengths of our system, in fact, that it isn't a system. But I persist in believing that there are certain basic principles that we ought to keep in mind before we veer too far away from them. One of them is, and this is surprisingly unique to our culture, that young people between adolescence and adulthood should have an opportunity to sort of take a breath, to reflect on who they are, to think about what kind of life they want to shape for themselves. And that implies the opportunity to explore subjects that they may never have encountered before, to find out what they're good at and what they're not so good at, to take risks and fail and not have those failures haunt them for the rest of their lives. These are assumptions that are built into the American idea of college, which is very different from the way in many other cultures people think of preparation for the university, where young people are expected really to know the answers to those questions by the time they arrive at the university.
To basically have picked in advance what their major will be and not have that time of exploration.
Well, even the concept of a major is kind of alien in most countries. A major means what you study all the time in many other countries. In our country, we try to find this balance between what we sometimes call general education and then the choice of major. So the whole emphasis on fluidity and opportunity, which is a very deeply American idea that you can reinvent yourself, you can discover that there's something about yourself you didn't know, that's built into the conception of college, and I would be very unhappy to see that disappear even more completely than it already is.
Professor Del Banco, I don't want to oversimplify the point of your book, but at some level, would you say that your basic argument is that college graduates these days aren't well-rounded enough?
I guess I do resist the soundbite reduction, but well-rounded in the sense that they're forced too early by many, many pressures from their parents, from society at large, from the economic realities, and from the institutions themselves to pick an identity, as it were. This is who I am. This is the vocation or profession that I'm preparing for. In that sense, yes, I would like to see a broader experience in their college years. And to that end, let me mention another very basic principle of the American college, which is fundamentally different, I think, from educational thinking in other countries. And that is that students have something, in fact, a great deal, to learn from one another as well as from their teachers. This is the idea that you join a community because you have something to bring to it. And that idea was present in the 17th century, and it implied a certain kind of diversity, not diversity in the sense that we use it today, no doubt. All the students in the 18th century at New England colleges had more or less the same color skin and similar genealogies. But nevertheless, there was this implicit or incipient idea that in order for a college to be a real learning community, you want students who are different from one another. And that idea persists all the way into our own time. In fact, it underlies Justice Powell's famous decision in the Abaki case back in the 70s that taking into account race as one factor in putting together a college class is legitimate because black people have had one kind of experience, Hispanics have likely had another, recent immigrants from Asia have had yet another, and it's good to get all those people together so that they can learn from one another. And that's another aspect of the American college that I think we want to protect.
You write in your book that the ideal college education would be a broad humanistic one. What do you think that college students who don't get that lose out on? How do their educations suffer?
There's an enormous amount of talk about college. Politicians are arguing about it. You know, should everybody go or should not everybody go? How do we pay for it? And then, of course, people rush to the newsstand to get the magazine so they can find out what the so-called best colleges are. So there's a lot of talk, but I think there's a certain lack of clarity about what the reasons for this preoccupation are. So the first argument that you hear almost all the time from all points in the political spectrum is the economic argument. And it's a good one. We need an educated population to compete in the global marketplace. For most of the emerging careers in the 21st century, a high school education is not sufficient. But there's a second argument, which I think is at every bit as important, which one hears much more rarely. And that is, we cannot have a democracy without an educated citizenry. We must have a citizenry that can tell the difference between demagoguery and serious leadership, that can tell the difference between arguments and opinions, one based on evidence, the other based on prejudice or a pre-existing preference for one point of view or another. The ideal college classroom, and this can be anywhere, and I don't like the hierarchical distinctions, but it can be anywhere from a community college to an Ivy League institution. An ideal college classroom is a place where students learn that first they learn to speak civilly to one another, they learn to listen to one another respectfully, and they learn that it's possible that they're going to walk in with one point of view and they're going to walk out with another, or at least with a curiosity about another point of view. Seems to me that's a kind of rehearsal space for democracy. And we need as much of that as we can possibly get. I don't think it matters what your politics are. Most Americans agree that there's something wrong with our politics, that the soundbite culture and the distortions that are out there are intolerable. We need a better educated population. And I think college is a powerful institution if we're going to try to achieve that.
And do you think that college students who focus on business and management, which you are critical of, that narrow focus rather than a more broad humanities focus, do you think they're not getting that kind of rigorous practice of expanded thinking?
Any subject can be taught if there's in such a way that the mind of the student can be enlarged. Science and engineering and mathematics are tremendously important for our competitive position in the world. And I think a citizen today can't really understand the world without some basic grasp of science. But we don't want to lose the opportunity to reflect on the deep philosophical questions that you find in ancient texts. And you don't want to lose the opportunity to get some historical perspective on the present.
That's Columbia University professor Andrew Del Bonco. Go to hearandnow.org to read an excerpt from his new book. When we come back, can a text from 400 years ago shed light on today's foreclosure crisis? And later in the show, struggling democracy in Egypt. Several presidential candidates have been banned from running. Back in a minute, Here and Now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science. Find over 200 job openings at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back. We're talking about higher education and the decline in students studying the humanities. Our guest is Andrew Del Bonco, a professor of American Studies at Columbia University, and the author of the new book, College: What It Was, Is, and Should Be. Del Bonco understands the challenges facing many students and their families. State schools have seen funding cuts, tuition at most schools is out of reach for many people, and huge numbers of students graduate with massive loans. As a result of these pressures, many of them feel they have to study subjects that will help them find jobs. But Del Bonco says literature and history are critical too. He writes about a very early text in American literature, a sermon delivered by the Puritan John Winthrop, that references creditors, debtors, and lenders. Del Bonco says that piece of writing, titled A Model of Christian Charity, can teach today's students a lot.
Here is this sermon, which initially most students would say, my goodness, why do I need to read this? This has nothing to do with my particular religious commitments. It's almost 400 years old. But you find out that this fellow is saying to those who've traveled across the ocean with him, look, we have to figure out what the rules are going to be in this new society. when should one demand payment of a debt? Should one demand it under circumstances where the person owing you the money simply doesn't have it because he or she has been a victim of an economic catastrophe? And Winthrop, like any good Puritan, goes to Scripture to find an answer. And his answer is that you have to be flexible. You have to extend the terms for repayment. Maybe sometimes you even have to forgive the debt altogether. Now, I don't need to point out how relevant those questions are to the present crisis following the massive amount of home mortgage foreclosure. The job of the teacher is not to prescribe the right answer. It's not to say, okay, we derive from this text a lesson on how such and such a bank should behave. But it is to point out to students that the questions that we face today are not new, that there are resources in literature and in many different kinds of religious and ethical traditions for thinking about them. You asked earlier about, is it okay for undergraduates to study business? Sure, but I think if they study it with something like that context in mind, that would be a better way to go than purely, maximize your retail potential.
There are many people, as you know, who argue that not everyone should go to college, and maybe they shouldn't go to a four-year college, maybe get an associate's degree, maybe go to a trade school, study the automotive industry. Are you arguing that everyone should have some Kant or some Melville or some Dickens on the side, no matter their level of academic ability?
Well, I would say a couple things about that. My sense is that the people who are most vociferous in saying that not everyone should go to college are always talking about somebody else's children. Of course, not everybody is going to go to college, but as an ideal and as a goal, which presumes that a great many more people than we tend to assume are capable of personal growth and self-fulfillment through a study of literature and encounter with ideas and encounter with people different from themselves. In that, I firmly believe. And I think that we tend to shortchange many of our fellow citizens. We tend to try to sort people out by intelligence based on their performance on standardized tests at an early age. And I think that is a very pernicious trend. It's very clear to me from personal experience and from what I've read and witnessed secondhand as well as firsthand that people in all walks of life, including people with long prison sentences, people with terrible histories of drug abuse, can have life-transforming experiences by doing college-level work. So we don't want to become a society that decides that, you know, only the privileged few or only the people beyond a certain cutoff score on the test are entitled to more education. We want to be a society that makes the opportunity for more education as widely available as possible.
If in the end what college graduates most need is jobs, how does this idea of a broad humanistic education assist with that?
Well, I think students are understandably anxious about what they're going to be able to do after college, especially those who are carrying a heavy debt load, and we need desperately to address that problem. But at the same time, I think students and parents tend to shortchange the value of a broad liberal education for the market after college. Many CEOs that I've talked to and people in law firms and people in all kinds of sectors of the business world will tell you they want students who can think for themselves. They want students who can express themselves, who can write well. They want students who have some perspective and some imagination. And those qualities are the ones that a good college should foster and develop. So I don't think there's any contradiction between a broad liberal education and one's prospects in the marketplace after college. On the contrary, I think the fit is a close one.
Although you do seem to think that there's a loss when a student just focuses on marketable skills like, you know, information technology and doesn't come out with a good grounding in the humanities.
The key word there is just, right? I mean, there's nothing wrong with a student at a certain point in college deciding, you know, this is something I'd like to try and I need to attain the following skills. I mean, if you want to go to medical school, you've got to take those biology and chemistry courses. But you don't want to do that at the expense of the broader educational experience, not just in the classroom sense, but in all the other respects in which the American college has been a special institution.
So it's really about balance.
Well, balance is one way to put it. I'd like to think of it more as a sort of dynamic combination, because if you educate yourself broadly and you get some perspective on the world, you're going to bring to your narrower focus more energy, more enthusiasm, and more creativity. It's not about let's have a little of this and a little of that so we get the right balance. It's about putting it all together and coming out of college as close as a not as a complete human being, but as a human being who has an appetite for learning that will that he or she will carry forward through the rest of his or her life. That's the kind of employee that every employer I know anything about wants to hire. They want somebody who's going to be curious and interested in learning and getting better at what they're doing, not somebody who thinks of themselves as a peg in a slot.
Andrew DelBanco is the author of College, What It Was, Is, and Should Be. Professor DelBanco, thank you.
Thank you.
Let us know your thoughts on hereandnow.org. Click on Contact Us to send an email. You can also find us on Facebook. News is next. This is Here and Now.
Support for Here and Now comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where the program is produced, and by Harvard University, whose Harvard Extension School has online and on-campus courses for students around the world, extension.harvard.edu, and by the Institute of Contemporary Art Boston with Figuring Color, exploring the expressive power of color in paintings and sculpture, icaboston.org.